A Christmas Story by Hardy White. Notice I said a Christmas story and not the Christmas story. It is an indefinite article. That means it's an article that never ends, not the definite article, the. So it's not the Christmas story, and even the Christmas story is called a Christmas story. It is one of many. But this is a Christmas story, and let me explain the difference. It's like the difference between a menorah and a Hanukkah. You may have seen your Jewish neighbors or your Jewish self celebrating Hanukkah with a 9-branched menorah. But really, technically, it's called a Hanukkah. The menorah refers to the original 7-branched lamp that sat in the temple that was destroyed a bunch of times. So we know the story of Hanukkah. No, we don't. Well, read up on it. You can read up on it at your public library. Ba-dunk-dunk. And you should. But so the temple had been destroyed. Now the priests and all, they'd gathered and they say, now we got to make a new menorah. How many branches does it have? And they went, oh, I should know this because look at it every day. It's just one of those things. You just take it for granted. You see it, but you don't see it, right? How many windows in the building that I pass every day going to work? I don't know. And so they took a guess and they were like 8 or 9. I don't know. So they said, let's do 8 because I'm pretty sure it was even. And then we'll do one in the middle, and that'll be, we'll call it the Shamash. What does the Shamash mean? Well, that means the servant. It really means the slave. And it's also, I believe, what they call, I don't know if you've ever been in an old shul where they have an old elderly man. I was in one time, and I said, Rabbi, the Shamash just helped me. And he said, what? We don't have a Shamash. I go, yes, that elderly man who keeps the wood-burning stove lit. And he got a funny look on his face and goes, that hasn't happened in 200 years. And so a lot of times there's ghosts. You'll see a ghost there. But what this candle does, then you light the other candles on every day of Hanukkah to help you remember how many there are. Because then if you lose it, you'll remember that way. You go, I remember there was maybe even a rhyme. But I don't know if that includes the number. I know how to make, there's a song that'll help you make potato pancakes. Actually, the song just tells you that you want them, maybe, or that you're making them, but not how to make them. That should be in songs. If a song is going to extol the virtues of something, it should tell you how to make it. Can you imagine in the future, because we have this song about how wonderful mead is, but nobody knows how to make it. Go, oh, I think my friends who are role-playing people know how to make. They'll make some. You go, oh, how about that? All right, I think it's like fermented honey, but I don't know. So people are yelling, yes, it is. You should try some. It's great. There's so many things that I need to try that I don't want to. But I don't know whether I need to or not. It's irrelevant. And I don't want to perish necessarily, but I do want a couple moments before I do just to think back on how many things at that point, everything will seem needless. Well, this was pointless. And so I don't know if people need the threat of eternity to give meaning to anything. But let's assume that you don't need that, and that this Christmas story that I'm telling to you needn't have an end as long as the moments are all good. Now, the kind of story I like most, and I got to tell you, is there was one when I was in fourth grade or something. The teacher came in, and she said, I'm done with trying to think of something up. I'm going to read a book out loud. And we go, oh. And she said, I'm going to read the book out loud, and I'm going to hand out these little kits, and I would like you to all roll cigars while I'm reading to you. And so it was wonderful. She had a project going, and we helped her with the labor, and she helped us by teaching us. So the book that she read was James and the Giant Peach by Roald Dahl. And he did Charlie and the Willy Factory or whatever, and all those books about children and how vaguely detestable they were or something. I don't think he was a very happy man. I don't know. But I like the fact that this child was going into something giant. And I remember the story finally, and I read it years later, and I go, I don't know. It must have just triggered something in my imagination at the time, because it wasn't the story itself. It was the idea. It gave me the idea of going into small things and then being large. So it gave me the idea of relative size, and I didn't need the story anymore. So, and I'm glad, because I went, look at me, I'm the head of the Raw Doll fan club. And then go, like Patricia Neal and everything. So I said, I don't know about any of that. Well, there you go. I just know that the idea captivated me. It took me, and it pulled me in. And so my Christmas story is going to have something to do with falling into objects and then becoming very small. So let's say that I woke up on Christmas morning. And then I walked out to the Christmas tree. We had a Christmas tree, inexplicably, there in the living room. And it smelled, it smelled of pine. To this day, I don't know if it was real or not. Because I was told, your grandfather got this from Disney World. They were selling all these things. And they said, we can't guarantee whether they're real or not. We don't know. So we have this warehouse. It's called the Imaginera Storage. And in there, we put objects that we don't know whether they're real or not, like plants that were maybe manufactured for the jungle tree or one of those. But we can't be sure. And there's even people in there. We have presidents. We don't know whether they're animated presidents or is a real president. So it's you could walk home with actual Nixon. Because we don't know whether it was, but the Nixon who died could have been the mechanical Nixon. Now I'm thinking that was a Flintstone episode. Do you remember that? I think Dawes Butler was doing the Nixon voice. And it was really, really strange. Nixon! Like that. He did it like that. I know that's not the way he spoke. But it doesn't matter because I remember the Beatles. They had a Beatles cartoon. And that was the same guy who in the Haunted Mansion goes, "Welcome to the Haunted Mansion." That kind of thing. And Paul Frees, and most of the Beatles, and he didn't even try, which is beautiful. So do you want to hear the Beatles? No. Where are they from? From England. England? All right. And he just did that, which is one, I think that's sort of wonderful. I think when we try to, in art, this is the same way. When you try to represent something realistically, you usually get it wrong in a bad way. If you just go like, I'm just going to do what I can. Then sometimes you nail it. You know, that's why children's art, and you go, how is that so wonderfully naive? You go, yeah, try to become naive after you're already jaded. After you've already decided the way something looks or what something is, try to go back. It's hard. You can't go back to that original, those virgin eyes, that tabula rasa, how you came into the world. That's why all those early memories seem it's. Everything seemed like magic because it was, because you couldn't see the strings yet.
And now that I see the strings, I realize the mystery is greater.
Yeah, whatever. But I mean, just practically speaking, not spooky. Not everything has to be. Not everything has to be profound, I don't think. And
actually, it does. Actually, it isn't. Actually, it does, isn't.
Okay. I think there's a wonderful career to be had as an intellectual, merely contradicting everything. I think people do it in science and the arts. That's not the case, Hardy. And it's wonderful. I think it's because we have found for a long time conflict to be entertaining and winning. So nobody wants to see people get together and reach consensus. That's boring. We want to see them poke each other's eyes out. Nobody wants to watch someone agreeing or all getting along. And we feel that that's the case with entertainment, too. Let's watch one of those Christmas movies. Like, no, they're stupid. Why? Because everybody's sitting around there happy at the end. That's just not the way life is. Well, it's not because there is no end, but occasionally you do sit around there happy. And occasionally there is nothing going wrong. And every once in a while, there's contentment. But you wouldn't always know it. And I'm not saying that all art should make you feel good or something like that, but I always thought some say, hey, it's the holidays, yeah, and I'm just feeling kind of tender, yeah, and I was wondering if we could just get some hot cocoa or something and watch, just curl up and watch, like, one of those shows that takes place in an emergency room. Or police are chasing or shooting somebody. So you go, oh, okay, that'll make us think. I like that. Pull us out of that. No moment of peace should be unmarred by a good contrast, right? So, oh, life is better. Having this wedding, wouldn't it be great if a body dropped from the sky like somebody was clinging to the landing gear of an airplane? They just, oh, that would teach everybody to see the balance. Nothing teaches anybody anything. I realize that, especially very stark lessons. Stark lessons are almost the most easily ignored. I don't know, the lessons that got into me were things that infected or had the opposite or an unintended effect. So when they read me that James and the Giant Peach, I started thinking about physics. Not, I didn't call it that, but I started thinking about relative size. And the minute I thought about relative size, I thought about relative anything. And I was like, oh my gosh, all this language refers to the situation between me and the thing I'm observing. That's where the size comes in. Should I close my eyes, I may have no idea of the size or scale of a thing. I just exist. I just am. And so sometimes I'm deceived by the outside world. It either closes in on me or it gets too big. It gets too big or gets too small. Sit with me now. Are we sitting around a tree? Let's not make it a cut tree. That's a little bit depressing. Say, oh, we killed this tree and brought it inside and adorned it. Go, that's fantastic. If that were a human being and this was an eccentric New Orleans funeral where they said, you know, oh, it's Mama Kitty and she wanted her body propped up and it put beads on her and cigarettes just like in life, that'd be great. But the tree did not request this. So please cut me down in my prime because they're little. They're little baby trees. We shouldn't cut down trees? Yes, of course. Come on. I'd cut down the elderly if you're making a meeting hut. You might have to cut down the bigger trees. But so let's just go outside. Come with me outside. Crunch through the snow, either the snow. What are we crunching through? It could be anything. If you need it to be crunchy, leaves, anything, bones. Oh, where are these bones? It's a bone field from some future war. And the war, oh, the war was between very tiny little people. And so they didn't even look like people to me. I thought they were little mouse bones. But now I get a careful look at them and I see little helmets on them and everything. Oh, am I a giant or are these tiny people? Gulliver's Travels was written by a sarcastic Irishman. I am now going to explore the area around this tree with you as we sit there. Let's sit on benches that we've made out of stones, by rearranging the stones, by taking what's there and putting it in a new configuration. We sit here together, and I'm going to tell a story that happened to me when I was young. We were exchanging presents, and you know, the presents sit around there, and I picked up a box and I shook it. And my mother said, stop picking up the presents and shaking them. And I shook it, and it sounded like, I don't know, something rattling around, kind of a dingy thing. And my grandfather said, it's an alarm clock. And my mother said, why did you say that? Now, he didn't know it was an alarm clock. He was making a joke because he thought, it can't possibly be an alarm clock. It merely sounds like one. My mother, for some reason, assuming the worst, that he had just sadistically blurted out what was in the package, chided him. But who was it that gave away the secret? Was it the person that actually literally said the truth? Or the person that said, that's a secret? So I don't know. No, I do know. It was my mother. She just assumed assumed the worst from my grandfather's behavior. But he wasn't really like that. That wasn't his idea of a joke. So her assumption was completely inconsistent. And to this day, I won't buy my mom anything. No, that's not true. No, I buy my mom things all the time. My mom will give me a gift list. Say, oh, these are, so give me some suggestions, Mom. I don't know. You know, you have everything. You reach a certain age. Surely you have everything. So she'll give me a list of things, and I'll go through it, and I'm like, well, they don't make that anymore. They don't make that anymore. They don't. And I guess I could look. I go, Mom, I looked around in warehouses and stuff. Usually I'd just go to the department store, but now this last decade or so of having to go to eBay and make bids on things that you want from the 70s. I end up getting my mom. There's so many types of scarves that you don't even have to. It's like Christmas stories. The scarf, a scarf. She's never going to say, you got me the scarf last year. But that probably is the truth. So this is the scarf. You know, this is the girl. That's from Mulholland Drive, the Lynch movie. They come to these nefarious figures come to a director and they say, this is the girl that you're putting in the movie. And he doesn't want to do it. And so they make him go talk to a scary cowboy who in reality is just a friend of David Lynch's. Isn't that fun? So, that's how the world works. Isn't it? It's all over the place. I have been now alive for a little bit of time, and I have seen many Hanukkahs, many Christmases, many holidays, Tish B'Av, holidays in between. National this and that day, which is, I remember calling the government and saying, can you be more specific? And they go, Congress does not wish to be more specific at this time. We have finally reached a consensus. Well, not even. Nowadays, they couldn't decide it. Let's national this and that day. National whatever you want. Want? So there's some objection to everything. And I think the objection comes first. Then they got to find the reason. So that's interesting. Things flipped around. So you say something, and then even if I agree with it, I have to decide what about it I don't agree with. Otherwise, there wouldn't be Twitter. Everybody just go, uh-huh. But conflict. I would submit, and I would say I would submit because I never get around to submitting. I don't know. I don't think my stuff's ready to submit. I don't know that I'm... Should I submit this? I don't know. I'm going to do it at an open mic.
Hello.
I would like to submit this for you to totally agree with. I don't believe that conflict is the only entertaining interaction. And this is why. Because I've been in situations or things where we're all doing something together. And you were able to keep your identity. So let's say you're I was at a party recently, and there were some party games. I'm not going to lie to you. And I'm always the person who goes, oh, geez, like that, you know. But I do them because I might get something out of it. And also, it isn't about me necessarily. Like, I can give up a little of my, you know, it's not all about autonomy or something. It's just, hey, this is the, you know, it's a thing to do, and I like being with people, and if you were asked me, I don't really care what that is, if we're all hanging out and everything, and I like the folks, doesn't matter what we're doing, whether we're moving furniture, or painting a barn or something, I like it, or at a party. So we're playing these games where everybody's doing something, and everybody can absolutely keep their personality and attitude while they're doing the silly thing. You know, if you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it, but you can sit there and cheer people on or whatever. But I noticed it's not the conflict. I've also been to parties where you go, what are we going to do? Is there any organized party events? And they go, yes, we're going to do backyard bare knuckle fighting. And I say, oh, that's fantastic. we got a, it was a whole theme party. And so it wasn't just a slice of pizza, it was a Kimbo slice of pizza. They had all this fun stuff. And it was bare knuckle fighting. Now, first couple fights were just horrifying, you know, and I was thinking, is this necessary? Couldn't we just be playing Mad Libs? And I know that's not like the greatest thing in the world, but you can do it and drink. And I tell you, holding your drink while you're bare-knuckle backyard fighting is, you'd think it'd be an advantage. It isn't, because you can't hit him with the drink. And that's not part of the rules. So you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And, I mean, I don't use stemmed glasses regardless. I find them. So, well, even for wine? Well, why? I mean, well, your hand will touch the wine. And do what? Well, I mean, I don't need a stemmed glass. I'm not fancy. I drink wine out of a jam jar. I'm not trying to be the opposite of pretentious. I knock things over and I break things and I know better now. And I go, okay, it's not worth it. I can't. If a delicate thing is not working, I used to have a hat, and the hat was made of mica. What is that? I think I'm making this up, but yes, and it was like, and every time I touched the brim, a piece would break off, and I go, this is dumb hat material. I'm going to give in. I mean, I don't like the kind of crushable felt hats, but I'm going to get one. And so I did. I got one. And sometimes you just have to adjust. Now that I'm becoming, I would look in the mirror the other day, and I was like, oh, dang, you know, I'll tell you what. You have traded something. I don't know what you looked like before, but now you look like you have experience, like a little bit of character, and almost a little bit scary. And I just looked at that face, and I was like, man, you might have a second life as a character actor or something. If that face keeps going at this rate, that's so great. Let it sag. Let it get, let everything get yellow. I don't mind. I'm not. It's the kid in me is enjoying it. I was like, look at how nasty, look at my nasty old something. I find it funny. Not pain. Pain is not, you know, nobody likes that. But the other part, it's wonderful. And I invite you to get old with me on this Christmas. The family rose at 5 a.m. and we all walked out into the living room. What we didn't expect is what was about to happen next. Oh, yes, what was about to happen next was so unexpected that it had not even, we had to pause because it hadn't even been written yet in the book of fate. We had to take a minute. So as we walked into the living room, nothing was scheduled to happen in the universe. And that had never happened before. Most everything has a cause. And we were walking into this space that had no cause, hadn't previously happened. I don't know what that was about. It just happened one Christmas. So we walked in there, we waited a few minutes, and once everything was set, we walked in to participate in what was to be our unexpected fate. I approached the Christmas tree, and I saw upon it an ornament I had never seen before. You may have seen some of these Christmas balls that have a little dent in them, and inside the dent is some sort of little scene. Maybe it's a manger scene or what have you. Well, I looked into this one. Instead of a manger scene, I saw a little indentation, but it looked like the doorway. It looked like you were stepping up to a castle or something. You know what I mean? The steps go up, and then there's the big double doors, and maybe there's knockers and something. That's what I was looking at, and I looked at that, and I looked at it a long time, and I got up close to it. So close to it so I could see, you know, you squint your eyes, you look down, you say, I wonder, and you imagine that it's bigger than it is. And when, as I did this, I found I was standing in front of the doors and they were the size of large castle doors, not a castle, but a big, what am I thinking, like a chateau. And it turns out that I was in front of a chateau. As I turned around, I looked and saw the expanse of green and brown fields there that dirt road went off into the trees, and I could see I was at some sort of French chateau that maybe hadn't been lived at in many years. You know, the time, once upon a time, a lord or lady lived there, some count or viscount, some, who knows what they were. I could list titles, but I don't know them all. But not a duke. Probably a duke didn't live there. I don't know, though. A baron. barren different than on my count. And I stood there at the door, and I was wondering, well, I wonder if I should go in. I wasn't wondering why I wasn't in my living room anymore in front of the Christmas tree, and that's because this had never, wasn't scheduled to happen before, it wasn't in my imagination. I didn't see it as a viable possibility. So my brain adjusted, and I accepted my reality immediately. Well, I thought about knocking on the door, but that might attract undue attention. And this place looked abandoned, and I thought maybe I'd just go inside. And I walked inside, and I saw a grand room, a grand entrance room. And there was a vast wall to my right, and it was a scene. It was two people walking down a path, and there were some sheep, and there was a house in the distance, and it maybe looked like this house. And I could tell by the style that it was been painted by the French painter Watteau. Watteau had painted a great fresco upon the wall of the chateau. It was a chateau with a Watteau. And I said, I was paralyzed because I was trying to think of some dad jokes and puns and stuff, and I was like, no, move on. Because if you stay here and you just become sort of enamored with the words or the sounds or the appearance, you're going to miss what's in this house. You're going to miss the mystery because you're so busy trying to be clever. And I find that if you ever engage somebody, not get engaged to somebody, did you ever like say something, you trust somebody with feelings and the reaction is a pun or something, and you feel so, but you say, what is it called when you trust somebody enough to open up your heart to them and let them really look inside of you? And your friend goes, I don't know, surgery? Like that, you feel a little bit betrayed, right? Because there's been some sort of attempt at cleverness at the expense of understanding. And I wondered, what is the roots of this? When did people become, when did being a wise ass sort of become embedded? I mean, did we always have it? Said, well, yeah, I mean, your uncle used to be. But I mean, was everybody always like that? I can't imagine. I don't think they were necessarily. I guess they were and they weren't, you know? Do people always resent any kind of sincerity? I'm like doomed if that's the case. I don't know. Remember, do you ever have a relative or someone said, I'm just trying to toughen you up? Is it tough for what? I mean, I don't know. I don't think the situation itself might toughen me up. I know that they do that with soldiers. Let's try to come as close to battle as we can so you get ready for it without being fully destroyed. So then when you go into it and get destroyed, you will be ready to be destroyed. And question, why are we doing this to begin with? I don't know why I do anything, and I don't know if I'm a coward or I'm brave, and I don't know if I tolerate pain or can't tolerate it. There's nothing to compare it to. Everybody thinks everybody else is getting off easy, I think. I know that. That person doesn't have enough pain. That person has too much pain. Go, oh, gosh, don't I wish you were the Lord God judge of everybody so you could decide just how much pain and suffering everybody should have, all individuals. We could bring it before you, and you could say, yes, they've made the right decision. No, if I give them money, they will use it on drugs. All right, well, they have a little money already. Well, should I take that away from them? Yes, take everything away from them. Then they will be able to make no decisions. And then there you go. Then maybe you can make all the decisions for them. And then that way, no. But you just said that you don't trust or love them. So why? Huh? I don't know. Well, I stood there in the chateau. I started to remember my living room. And I started to remember the tree. And I started to remember the expectations I had for getting gifts. So would one of these gifts be transformative? I was always waiting for that. If I got in one of these, in Gene Shepherd's Christmas story, it was a BB gun. So if I got that BB gun, everything would be different. You know, no harm would come from it. Not only that, it'd give me an identity. I'd feel cool. I'd feel better. Always waiting for that object. Always waiting for a gift that will be transformative, that will change me. We like fiction like that. Isn't there a magic ring? Isn't there a magic sword? Isn't there a magic hat? That if I receive it as a gift or by chance, I will have all the power or the answers. I will have pleasure and joy and happiness. Perhaps I will be impervious to pain if I have this thing. And so you look for the gifts and you look in the boxes. And then one day you're sucked into a Christmas ornament, into a Watteau chateau that's very tiny. Is it very tiny? It looks very large. And when I was in the chateau, I heard a thunk thunk. And I looked outside. And where I'd come in that vast field, on that dirt road between the house and the woods, there was a Hanukkah, a very large Hanukkah. And I thought, man, Chabad is like everywhere, even in my dream. But it wasn't quite like that. It didn't look like the big industrial kind. It looked like a proper size kind that was now the size of a three-story house. So I walked out to it. And when I walked out to it, the base of it opened up like a spaceship with a ramp. And down the ramp walked a bearded man. And I said, "Who are you, bearded stranger? Are you Santa Claus?" And he says, "I am Klaus the Shamish." And I said, "Oh, you're like a 18th century Hasidic Jew or something?" He goes, "No, I'm not Hasidic." I go, "Oh, okay." He said, "Have you ever been to Vilna?" I said, "No, I've not been to Vilna." He said, "Okay, forget it then. Listen, I want you to come inside this Hanukkah, and I want you to see what I've done with the place. I've made it into it's like a conversion van." And I said, "What?" And he goes, "Yes." He said, "Many years ago, I was shown a vision of the future. And the vision of the future was just a magazine with an ad for conversion vans, but not the cool kind. It was a Vanagon. It was like early 80s or something, but it was a Vanagon." And I said, "Oh." He said, "But this idea that it could be turned into a little house, a little space, you know, where you could live and you could drive and you could roll your house, it fascinated me." And so I said, "What if I could turn a giant menorah time machine into a camper van and just drive it?" And I said, is this where the myth of Santa Claus visiting people on what is that? Is that Santa?" "No," he said, "those are reindeer." I go, "Well, that's what I meant. I thought it his reindeer. I didn't mean Santa had the bells on him. Why do the reindeers have the bells?" And apparently he explained to me that in Lapland, the reindeer are notorious for killing birds. And so the reindeer herdsmen, the Laplanders, will put the jingle bells on them so that the birds are startled and fly away. The antlers of the reindeer are bird lures. See, the birds see that and they think those are branches of a tree. The bird perches on the reindeer's antler, and the reindeer, you don't see it very often, have these tongues, enormous tongues, and it will fly out of the reindeer's mouth, stick to the bird, and blah, and right back, just like when did you ever have a thing of popcorn, and you go, and you use the tip of your tongue, you use the adhesive properties of your spit, and the relative lightness of the popcorn kernel to go, and pick it up with your tongue. That's what the reindeer does with the bird on its antler. And so with this, the tongue comes out, the bird hears that and flies off. Why don't the reindeers starve, you ask? Well, they found out that the reindeers would rather work than eat because they're magical creatures. And so they say, if we can pull people around, if we can do something in service of commerce, then I believe that we would feel physically nourished? And I don't think so. I don't think so, I said. But that's why. And I don't know that there's still reindeers. And I don't know that the kind that fly are gone. Because they, I think that happened after the war. Before that, we used the flying reindeer to carry messages, much like passenger pigeons, which are also all gone. What does that tell you? Well, isn't it weird that flying reindeer and passenger pigeons, they disappeared around the same time that global communication started kicking in? Say, oh, too bad there's no passenger pigeons anymore. Would you be interested in public telephone long-distance service, sir? That's how they did it. They killed the competition. Used to be other ways to communicate, and now there are a lot of times the things you love have been euthanized to make way for things that will be sold to you. And then once they have a hold of your traditions and you don't have control anymore of the source of your joy, you've given up a great thing. And maybe you don't have a source of... I have all these voices in my head when I go to do things that give me pure joy. And people long for it, but they long for innocence and they long for that kind of feeling. And they'll post something so jaded to put some on social media and say, look how pure this is. Please don't anybody say this person's secretly creepy or anything. I'm so tired of being disenchanted. You know, I know that feeling. I don't want to be disenchanted anymore. I want to be enchanted. I think a lot of times you're disenchanted by things that have been thrust upon you. They haven't found yourself, you know. Some individual that you've never met, that you only know through media. You know, you don't know the person. And you don't share any time together or meals together or anything. You know, the chance that they aren't the person you think there is, that's high. High chance. You know, and so I'm telling you, you can get those things out of individual relationships with people that are just in your life can be that inspiring and that entertaining, right? It's amazing. I've been around people and they say I got you know, I'm writing a book. I go, oh, that's great. You've got all these stories, and yeah, I got some stories. Did you? Funny, you never told any of them to me, just saving them to tell the strangers for money. I can see that. But I'm fine. I like to share art. I like to do it for people for the moment and things like that. And I wish, I'd like to be paid a lot of money. But I'm afraid if I use this thing that is the basis for my interacting with people that I know, you know, you wonder how it would change me. And I like to value those things, and I wish more people would trust how wonderful they are, just with nothing. Not no money or resources, I mean, with no badges or, you know, no hats or no awards or I don't need that. You know, I love open hearts and I love that. And those are the great people to have around this time of the year. And want to be one of those people. And I find that the older I get, and I'm not sort of competing the way I was. It's very competitive. When I was younger, I felt threatened by other people's successes and things like that. And what I didn't have a handle on was the complexity of everybody's life. Just how different everyone's circumstances are. Their challenges, their strengths, their drawbacks, everything is just so different. Comparing yourself is just, oh, it's such a dead end. And I was able to let go of that a little bit. And I got there through sort of memento mori castle of wonderfulness, where I stepped into this thing and a figure came out to me and said, everybody dies I said, okay, good. I just want to check, just making sure, because, I mean, I feel like everybody's getting away with something. No. Everybody suffers, and everybody dies. And you say, you're bumming me out on Christmas. And I'm saying, I'm sorry. No, I didn't mean to do that. I meant to liberate you. I meant to tear you loose and say, oh, it's no race. Look at your race and it's no race. Oh, I'm losing a race. You're losing nothing. Give me your hand. Give me your hand. You remember that gift that you wanted? That gift that would transform you like a Red Ryder BB gun? That gift that would make everything different like an alarm clock that would wake you up in the classic bell-ringing manner? That gift that would give you an identity, a paint set, I will be a painter. A guitar, I will be a guitar player. Look at this, a little ledger, I will be an accountant, I will do accounting things. A computer, I will be a computerist. All those shall give me an identity. I'll be able to excel at that thing. And then, there you go. And what if I already gave you that? And you didn't recognize it because it wasn't an object. Or if I didn't give it to you, somebody gave it to you. I bet you have it. Oh, yes, there's. And what is that gift that will transform me? I don't know. One time a neighbor gave me a box of stuff. They said, I don't know what's in here. There's some old coins. There's some old stamps. There's old paper money. It's just a bunch of stuff. They are little treasures to pick through. I don't know if any of them have any intrinsic value. You might find something in here you like. You might find something in here you like. When you get something like that, there's this every chance that you're going to find a coin that might be worthless to everyone else, but to you, it's beautiful and gives you joy. You may have gotten a gift that provides you joy, but you didn't recognize it because it didn't have the shape and substance that you thought it would. It's the wrong size. I thought it would be giant. I thought it would be small. And it waits for you. And you know what it is, maybe. Or maybe you don't. But I'd say, close your eyes. So I'm opening my eyes. That's how I see it. Close your eyes. The world's vaster with it closed. Once you've opened your eyes, once you've opened the gift, that little mystery ring in there, that mystery rattle is solidified. Schrodinger's gift. It's like that. Yes. It's like that. It's the unopened gift that's every gift. Oh.
And what I'm talking about is the human mind.
No, I'm not talking about anything. It's an analometa for a bunch of things. And I'm just glad to be with you. And I just want to be evocative of what? Of something that smells good? Let's have a mug. Hold a mug up now. In my mind, you're holding a mug of something. It's hot. It's a hot mug. It's cold out. And what does it smell like? I'm not going to start naming things because you're like, I'm allergic to cinnamon. I had a friend. I said, come over for pie. I'm making pies. And she said, I'm allergic to cinnamon. And I really wanted her at my house because she's a sweet person and a great artist. And I said, you're getting an apple pie with no cinnamon, and I made a caramel apple pie. So I don't know what kind of fragrances you like. If we were passing around the spices at the a good week, do a Havdalah, and you smell the spices, and you go, oh, allspice, huh? But if you like allspice, it's beautiful. So I want you to hold a mug of something. Maybe it's not even edible, but the smell is something that, like pine. Like, I wish I could just hold a mug of pine, but I don't want to drink pine tar or Lysol. But I wouldn't mind smelling it. So, you know, anything you want to smell in your hot mug, or maybe it is appetizing. I don't know what smells good to you. Oh, spices, it's exotic. I don't even know what it is. I know it's a hot mug, but it smells like my grandmother's closet, so it's slightly camphory, maybe. Slightly perfumey. My grandmother had a fur coat. I'm sorry. She just did. And I don't know what to do. I guess I should put it on a pyre or something, but I can't. I don't know what to do with it. I have it. It's not a fur coat. It's a, what do you call it? A stole. Like, you know, just wraps around you. And it's an animal pelt. And you go, burn, you should burn it. I go, I don't know. I'm thinking the animal's going like, don't add insult to injury. I mean, you killed me, use me. The 50 billion animals or something, tiny animals that it took to make it. But it's, here's the thing. My grandmother has been gone many years, and she's worn it. Before that, it was many years before she wore it. It smells like her perfume. And that's because the silage of Chanel products is actually decades, apparently. So you can, a good Chanel number 9, or number 5, no, is it 9? Number 5, excuse me. A good Chanel number 5, lasts, I guess, since the 70s or something. But I can smell it on there. How about that? And so that's a hard, it's evocative, you know, because I smell it and I think of cuddling up to this when my grandmother, when I was little, you know, I'd cuddle up to her when she's wearing this fur. And humans wore furs for years, by the way, thousands of years before realizing it was morally repugnant and that they should start killing plants in the millions instead of animals. And so I curl up to it, and I remember her. And there's nothing, it isn't the object, really. You could say, well, it triggered something. What? You know, the memories have no substance. The memories have no substance. How's your holiday going so far? Are we enjoying each other? Listen, I know that there is a burden of, there's a lot of pressure to be joyful, too. Say, so, Hardy, I can't take it. This isn't my holiday. Don't make me, there's pressure to be joyful. It's coming from all directions. There's pressure to spend money. I've got, you know, whether I have that values or not, the children in my life expect it, but I don't have the resources. This is a heartbreaking time. This is a time. I understand that. So I'm not telling you to do anything. I'm just bringing something, I'm bringing a little cup of joy by, and you can do whatever you want with it. I don't expect you to make it into anything. I'm just loving you. I don't want you to, there's no pressure to transform. You might go to your grave, never solving your problems or anything. But I'm going to come over and check on you. I'd love to bring you a warm cup of something, and I don't ask anything from you. And the reason I'm doing this is because I just like to, I'd like to spread the habit or something. You know, they used to, I don't know, there's a lot of traditions obviously started somewhere, right? And you say, we do this tradition because this really kind old lady who's a friend of the family started bringing these things to us, these cookies, and we liked it so much that we did it for others. And now it's caught on, and it's the cookie bringing, and it's all Mrs. Brown. Mrs. Brown brought the brown edge cookies. They think brown edge cookies refers to the edge of the cookies. It doesn't. It refers to Mrs. Brown. It's Brown's edge cookies. I don't think that's right. It is funny, though, in my grandmother's cookbook, she got the recipe from Mrs. Brown. So I always thought, is it brown? Is it brown edge cookie or Brown's edged cookies or something? For years, I thought it was shampoo in conditioner, that shampoo is a verb, and that you shampoo in the conditioner. Like you mix it in, you wash it in. But it's shampoo and conditioner was the product. It's my mishearing. And maybe you've misheard me today. Maybe you got something. I misheard you, and it changed my life. Can I take credit for that? Can you imagine that? I say something. You think I've said something different. It transforms your life for the better. And we all win. I think we win. Like, I don't need to take credit for it, that you're out there making the world better. Why do I care? How's that benefit me? I always think about that. That, you know, do I want things better, or do I want credit? Or do I want attention, or do I want to be effective? People say that all the time when they don't want to give you a raise. But that's not how I mean it, you know. Everything positive can be propagandized by money people to just be the opposite, to use your values as a weapon against you. Oh, it happens all the time. Your love, your sentimentality, your love of your children, your love of your old people, everything has been used against you to make you feel to make you feel vulnerable and to use that. So if you love children, the threat of harm to children will be used to sell you things. You know, always anything you love will be used against you by those who need you to need. And a lot of people need you to need. They need you to want. They need you to feel incomplete. And you will find if you feel incomplete, you feel good about yourself, you'll be attacked not just by those who have an agenda, but by those who just don't even know why. Isn't that amazing? Like when you see somebody have a healthy self-love or confidence, let's say on social media, stand back. It can't stand. You know, it's that the way to get love on the, you have to do that, you have to be self-deprecating. Oh, I'm useless. And then you get what you need. But I don't have to do that. You know, if I don't have money for a sandwich, I don't want to have to dress in rags and go out on the street, you know, because somebody doesn't want to give me sandwich money because I look like because I have a cell phone. So this need to be emotionally impoverished or in pain before you get any kind of sustenance is going to starve everyone. Everyone's going to starve. I love you. I don't know. You're not deserving of love because you're lucky or privileged. You're not deserving of love because you're unlucky. You know, you're all deserving of it. And you all have to struggle and you all die and you all suffer. And no amount of money can protect you from it. And nobody deserves the pain. It doesn't deserve it. Maybe in your religious tradition, that is a necessary cornerstone for your worldview. But I can't abide by it. I can't abide by it. You know, I feel as if I think suffering is productive, if I think suffering is necessary or virtuous, then I'm going to tolerate it. Because I'm going to think, well, they're suffering. They're going to imagine this jerk's reward in heaven. I wish I could suffer that much so I could get their heavenly reward. They should be thankful. I can't. That would blow my brain would explode. So, and I know all of this is because I'm stupid. And it's such a gift. You know, because I'm not saying get stupid on purpose. I think it's just something that's a beautiful thing that's happened to me. And but I would, I highly recommend it, of being an idiot. And people tolerate that, too. They tolerate my self-love, too, because of me being an idiot. And I'll go, like, I think I'm all right. And they'll go, well, that's because you're such an idiot. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. And I have what I think is pain. I don't know, you know. I can describe it. And even if I describe my pain, you might think, well, you're overreacting. So there's no, you're doing that to yourself. So there's no, you can't win with that. You know, if you say, well, I'm this, I'm in agony. And you're in agony. You're putting yourself in agony. That kind of thing. So you never, you can't win, you know. So I want to share this like special secret space where we get together, like on the radio like this. And I can say, hey, human being, with all your defects, look at your crazy messed up body. Look at your crazy messed up personality and mind. I love you. We're both here. Look, we came into this world. I don't know what's going on. You don't know what's going on. And there's a time limit. And we're gonna die. And it's scary. And I'm frightened. And things, some things excite me. And I'm confused. And sometimes I'm happy, even when I'm not supposed to be or something. But I just want to reach out and say, I recognize something in you. There's something in you that reminds me of myself. We are connected in some crazy way. And I feel like if I'm gentle and kind to you, I'm kind to myself. This idea that we're separate, or this you who looks so much like me, human being or creature, that we're all that different, I feel like I've been tricked. I've been tricked out of loving my family. And so I offer to you on this holiday season day time, a message of absolute pure heart. I'm coming to you as a recently unborn and a future dead. That in the recent past I was not, and in the recent future I will not be again. And so I am speaking to you as a spirit, as someone who is inconsequential, as a voice on the radio, as a voice in your head. And I'm just going to tell you, you're remarkable. And that you are lovable. Even though no one may have treated you that way. That your humanness, that your existence means that you are deserving of compassion for your experience. That's what I believe. And I can't dehumanize people I don't know. I just can't do it. I wish you wouldn't. And just, can we take some time today to just stop it? To stop it. You know it's wrong. You know that every time that you were a child and that you saw these wonderful, heartwarming things on the television, you felt kindness for the little stop-motion puppet who wanted to be a dentist. You felt tenderness for that. You felt tenderness for the other, for those cast out, for those who found themselves the victim of injustice, for those who were weak and who were treated poorly. You found something in your heart. Find it again. It does not make you weak. It makes you strong. If only the powerful would see this. If only Nebuchadnezzar would see this. Oh, Nebuchadnezzar would lose his crown. Yes. Would be cast out into the wilderness without a kingdom. Yes. But with something vastly better. A knowledge of the human heart and the spirit of life. So I'm saying, if waking up isn't doing it for you, then come into this dream with me. Come into the world that's relative, where small things can be made large and large things can be made small. Give me your hand. Let's go into the ornament on the tree. Let's go into the giant menorah. Let's go inside of these things and lose ourselves into a vast world of possibilities, worlds that are so much bigger than this one outside. Come and open up the ultimate gift with me. Open up this box. Take the bow out and get inside the box and find infinite possibilities. Oh, my friends, you are listening to Miracle Nutrition on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope 91.9 in Rockland County and New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Thank you. Bless you so much. Thank you for your blessings and kindness and love to me. And I hope that right now you're laughing hysterically. Maybe it's nothing I said, but a good laugh. Look at the funny papers. Check out, just go look some, don't watch a whole Three Stooges, but just a few seconds of Shemp, and that'll do it for you.
name was Ebony. My name was Mahogany. Twins' 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 name was Ebony.
Mm-hmm.